far away from my friend and relation, betrayed by the black velvet band.
Hello, hello. Welcome to the Shropshire Witches podcast. I'm Alex.
And I'm Amy.
And today we've got a very special episode for you because it's something completely different to anything we've done. We've got somebody that I'm a big fan of, actually, particularly on Instagram, which I'm forever kind of sharing things and liking things. But we've got the fabulous John O'Namaro, who is an expert on all things cemetery and much beyond that. But Jono, you're a very dapper chap with a sort of very kind of niche interest, but I think this is going to make a really fascinating episode for people. So we're going to kind of just delve sort of straight in and just go with whatever kind of things crop up, really. You're happy with that, aren't you?
Absolutely. And thank you very much for having me on.
Not at all, not at all. It's our pleasure. So let's start with, you know what, it might seem like a bit of a mundane question, but I've got to ask this because I'm fascinated myself. Where did this sort of knowledge and interest, passion, where did this come from? Because your Instagram, which you've got to talk to us about because it is fantastic, it's very entertaining as well as informative. Tell us how this kind of interest came about, because it must have started somewhere.
Yeah, thank you. I think as a child, as a lot of these things probably do, I was sort of raised on a diet of Time Team, which used to be on Channel 4. I don't know if you ladies watch that.
Yes.
Very much so. Yeah.
So Tony Robinson and Phil. And I still watch it today, actually. All those old episodes are still on YouTube, which is great. Talk about digital archaeology. I used to be a member of the Young Archaeologists Club, which I think I still hold my my membership card, which, you know, always works great at bars these days. And I just really loved history in general, to be honest with you. And also the element of fiction as well, in terms of things like Indiana Jones. So I sort of, as a child, I was sort of was fascinated with that, as well as ghost stories, hauntings, you know, Roman legions passing through basements in Brighton, that sort of thing. So I started from that, and that was sort of a kernel for later on in life to think, well, how can I adapt this to doing something which I find interesting on social media, and hopefully other people do as well? And that's sort of how I came about Cemetery Safari.
Okay, fantastic. So being sort of maybe just a slightly eccentric child as quite a lot of us are.
Yes.
And nurturing that interest as well. I was a big Time Team fan and a big Cadfael fan as well. So I think I'm probably a bit older, so Cadfael might be a bit before your two's time, but Time Team was definitely, that's top viewing. So let's go into something that I would like to know more about. And I've only been to a couple of them, but the Magnificent Seven, let's go straight into it, because I've mentioned this to you before in terms of what we want to chat about. But I'm fascinated by these graveyards, how famous they are. And in fact, with some of them, you can still be buried in some of them. They're not at capacity, are they? Is that right?
That's correct. Some of them you can still be buried in, but you know, the space is running out. And the one thing I would say is, though, that a lot of people don't know that just because you're buried in a cemetery doesn't mean you're there till time eternity. They do reuse the burial grounds, so you might have a chance. But something like I'll start slightly earlier than the Magnificent Seven is the Père Lachaise Cemetery in Paris, which really kicked off this idea of being buried outside the city walls, so to speak. And obviously then the English adopted that from there on in. But Père Lachaise started in, I think it was 1805, and it was opened during Napoleon's reign. And at the time in London and Paris, it was still very fashionable to be buried within your local church walls, or, you know, obviously underground in the crypt. But, you know, in the 16th, 17th and even 18th century, things were getting a little bit hairy in terms of the fact that the living were becoming sick from the dead. So obviously burial practices were, I would say they weren't exactly how they are today. And, you know, you had coffins being laid open and people being buried in a couple of inches of soil. I mean, there's actually a really fantastic record of this in, if you don't mind, if you entertain me for one moment, there's a Scottish doctor that wrote this book called Gatherings from Graveyards, Particularly Those of London, with a concise history of the modes of interment among different nations from the earliest periods. This is a title, by the way, and a detail of dangerous and fatal results produced by the unwise and revolting custom of inhuming the dead in the midst of the living. So that talks about all of the graves in graveyards in the city of London. And you had people falling into graves, basically, living people falling into the graves. So things were getting really bad. So Père Lachaise in Paris, and then obviously the Magnificent Seven cemeteries, they changed the way that people were buried and actually, thankfully, made things a lot safer for the living. And then starting, so Père Lachaise obviously started in 1804, and then the Magnificent Seven cemeteries, the first one was Kensal Green Cemetery, which I believe started in 1832. And that basically came about because things, as I said, got so bad that Parliament had to create an act, as it's called the Burial Act of 1832. And that's kind of where things really kicked off.
Okay. I suppose, yeah, I think they had to address something because this sort of mass population coming in from the countryside, particularly things like the Industrial Revolution as well. And this kind of attitude towards death, I find, with the Victorians is fascinating because there's grandeur there architecturally, of course, because as with all things Victorian, but there's also often laced with, I suppose, what now with a piece of time might seem like humour. It's probably not that humorous falling into a grave in practice. But there's also the outright macabre that comes with it. So, you know, going into the realms of body snatchers and all this kind of thing. And of course, even the fanciful things of the idea of being buried alive, which although medicine was coming on, people were actively quite afraid of, weren't they? And you had this idea of the kind of a bit of string or rope, what have you, being tied to maybe the index finger or the hand of the corpse, and then a bell on the top of the grave. I never know quite in practice how that would work with that amount of soil on top of you, but it's fascinating.
I mean, I wouldn't mind having that just in case. And that's obviously where we get the expression dead ringers from.
Oh, is that okay? See, I love that. I love the
Yeah.
phrase. Okay, that's really interesting.
Yeah. I actually, right next to me, funny enough, I have a book called Buried Alive, and it's by a Swedish doctor and author called Jan Bondesson, who I've had the pleasure of interviewing a few years ago, actually. He wrote a book also on someone called the London Monster, which was a chap 100 years before Jack the Ripper, and he would stalk the streets of London, and he would be attacking women's bottoms with a sword or a rapier. So that's maybe something else we could delve into at another time. But yeah, dead
Definitely.
ringers.
All of it. And you're like, dead ringers, that sounds, he's like a nice guy. There's a lot of ground to cover with that one. I mean, how, I've just got to go slightly into that. How prolific was he and how long was he at large?
Oh, the London Monster. I think he only had a bit of a reign of terror for a few months around London, but it got so bad, and these poor terrified Georgian women, they'd be wandering around with cork rumps on their bottom to repel the London Monster's blade. And it was a bit, it was sort of the first moral panic of its time. Obviously, you know, we're in an age where the media, or at least the newspaper, is just getting started. So it sort of coincided with that. So the London Monster, but the difference between him and Jack the Ripper, which is obviously 100 years later, is that the London Monster was caught and was put to trial and then death. So there is, I suppose one could say, a happy ending to it. But yeah, I did a documentary for that for the BBC a few years ago, and as I said, I had the pleasure of interviewing Dr. Bondson, and he's a very interesting chap. So yeah,
I bet.
it's out there, it's out there. But thankfully, the London Monster isn't.
You can find the London Monster's dead. Don't worry.
In a shallow grave.
Do you know where he's buried? No, because I suppose he was a criminal, so they wouldn't have. Yeah, okay. God, that's a Google search that's happening immediately after this podcast. I'm just gonna be like, that is fascinating.
You know what, Alex? That's a fair point. I actually don't know where he's buried, but I imagine it would have probably been in at one of the prison walls. I'm most likely thinking the one that's under. I'll tell you what, I'll have to get back to you on that. I always worry about saying potentially the wrong thing, especially when I do something on social media and Instagram, and then the comment sections are like wildfire, which is good in a way because it, you know, the algorithm starts whirring. But people really want your guts for garters.
Quite angry about stuff. You think it's okay. I do this, I have to do origins of phrases videos, and I always kind of make it clear that it's sort of, you know, this is one of the things that it could be, because of course people get up in arms and start saying it's not that. The mansplaining. They love it. They love it. So the Magnificent Seven, I've got to say, I've been to Brompton, and funny enough, and I feel like this is, I've got carte blanche now because you've sort of set the bar of weirdness pretty high, I'm going to argue.
Great. That's what I'm here for.
Mine's unshakable, so it takes a lot for me to find something weird. But I went on a date to Brompton Cemetery as well, which,
Great.
yeah, I love that. Also, we went to a pub afterwards, the Lily Lang Tree, and a man shouted at
Yeah.
me, threw a ball to his dog, and he went, "Don't throw the ball." And I was like, "Oh my God." It was.
I know that pub. Yeah, it's right next to Brompton. Did you plan this or the date, by the way?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, fine. Yeah, because that's the nearest pub to the cemetery. But yeah, it's a good one.
Go to the Lily Lang Tree.
Yeah, the Lily Lang Tree.
Have you done something similar? Is that why you're like, did you map that out? Because that's like, that sounds.
Yeah, I've actually, I mean, if we're going to go there, I've been on a number of cemetery dates. It's now come to a point where I'm now asked to, if we're going to go on a date, would I take a lady to a cemetery? It seems to be, it's all the rage. I think the seven cemeteries are going to see, probably their footfall rising. I don't know if it's just me doing it, but it seems to be the case.
And
I think I'm acquainted with the local staff. I'm either with a camera or a lady now, so it's one of the two, or both. Anyway, yeah.
that.
I think, yeah, I'm all for that. I loved it. I mean, I also hadn't realized quite how huge it was. So we started walking around, and I was thinking, don't start giving facts because I didn't know him very well at that point. So if I
Right.
started going like, well, this would have been a shadow grave, or this probably had three people in it at one point, like it's a niche market, isn't it? Like you
Yeah.
cast your net and see what comes back, and sometimes they're like, this is weird. But go on. So in
It's a
terms
good litmus test. It's a good litmus test, I'd say.
yeah,
Yeah.
take them to the cemetery.
Exactly. Yeah, maybe just not a large one next time. Don't go
yeah.
to Brookwood. That's the largest cemetery in the UK, because you'd be there for days. I nearly got lost in there. I kid you not. Death in a cemetery, that would be something.
Well, perfect.
Sure, it
Poetic.
happens. It has to happen, right? I mean,
Yeah.
It's got it. Yeah.
the irony.
The irony. That would be, but then I suppose it wouldn't be perfect because, it's more complicated than that. You can't just die in a cemetery and they just put you in a grave. They've got to have details and money and stuff like that. Anyway, ironing that out. So in terms of the Magnificent Seven, Johnny, which one, and this is such a childish question, but which
Do
one's
it.
your favorite and why?
That's a very, very good question. Well, off the top of my head, I'm probably going to have to say the obvious one, and it is Highgate Cemetery.
Yeah.
I know it's a bit like, what's your favorite band? And I'm not going to say the Beatles, but yeah, Highgate Cemetery for this answer would be the case, because especially the older part of the cemetery, which is in the west wing, one could say, which is older, and it is magnificent. I mean, it's ridiculous in terms of what the Victorians did, and I think you touched upon this earlier with the architecture. It almost feels a bit like a playground to some extent, and what they did there is absurd, and I don't think we would come up or do anything like that. Interestingly, I do love the Victorians and their grandiose ideas for this. I mean, originally, before any of these cemeteries were built, there was a chap that's his name escapes me, but he wanted to create a huge pyramid. I think it was 93 floors tall on the top of Primrose Hill, in order to bury people for the next couple of, 1,000 years, let's just say, with a viewpoint at the top to look over the Victorian industrious London. Needless to say, Camden Council decided not to go with that, because I think even at the time it would have cost something like 2.3 million.
Yeah, they were like.
Yeah, so computer said no in that regards. But so I just love the ideas, these grandiose ideas they came up with. And obviously, in regards to Highgate, you've got the Egyptian Avenue there and the Circle of Lebanon, and of course, on the east side you have Karl Marx's grave and a
Yeah.
number of other. Although actually, interestingly, people always think that where they go and visit Karl Marx with the big bust of his head is where he was originally interred, and that's not the case. So you can see his original grave, which was a little bit more, one would say, proletariat.
Okay, that's fascinating.
Yeah. So you can. It's nearby, but it's not actually where the bust is today.
Okay, I did not know that. That's
No,
extraordinary.
neither did
That's
I.
so interesting. I
See,
found
this is all good. This is all good fodder for your next date, by the way. I'm just putting
Thanks.
this up.
If I sort of misquote or say, yeah, I'm just going to be sort of like making notes, listen back to this in editing and be like, just
Yeah.
take that down.
Just drop me a DM. It's fine in the middle of the date. No
Yeah,
problem.
I will, because
Yeah.
I'll be like, help a girl out.
Yeah.
Usually I just go with like where musical stars are buried or something. I'm like, did you know that Mary Lloyd's here? And it's like, fuck, it's Mary Lloyd. I know who. And so
Mary Lloyd, yeah. Well, I mean, she's in Hampstead Cemetery.
She is. And I've been there and I walked around and I eventually found her grave and I was very, very excited. So yeah, I kept looking and I was sort of looking at, you know, like find a grave everywhere, trying to look on almost, I suppose, like you would an ordnance survey map, trying to find Mary Lloyd's grave. This is quite revealing, I know. And eventually, anyway, you know, plot thickens. I found it.
No pun intended, the plot does thicken. But sorry. There's going to be a lot of that. I'm sorry. I apologize in advance. But I would also say, I'm sure you ladies both know it, but there's findagrave.com, which is quite a helpful resource. I mean, it's not perfect, but, you know, because it's obviously user generated, but I believe it's the best we have. And, you know, I've certainly used it in times of trouble. I mean, I kind of wish, like, when I do the Instagram reels or any of these types of videos, that I would film the outtakes or the behind the scenes stuff, because actually that's where the majority of the funny things occur. Like we talked about falling in graves. I've fallen in a couple of graves and tripped and got lost or you know, thrown out, all the loads of all the stuff that one can imagine and more. So, you know, that's...
Was it the politest... Because I've got to ask about the throwing out first, because I think that'd be very amusing. Was that the politest throwing out that there ever was? Because I just imagine you went, yeah, I'm ever so sorry. Was it, like, very polite? They made you leave, or...
Of course. I mean, you know, obviously, the way of clearing people out of cemeteries, you know, a lot of goths and whatnot, and myself, you know, they ring the bell. So it's a different type of dead ringing now. Pella says they really go mad with the bells there. Fair enough. So that really helps. But, you know, of course, sometimes I get lost in the process of filming and, you know, I do overstay my welcome. So, you know, I think they're as surprised to see me as I am to them. They probably think I'm some sort of apparition with an iPhone or something. But no, it usually, I mean, I always try and be polite and especially, and I think that the other thing would be is it can all be fun and games, but ultimately you are in a place of respect and burial and, you know, and also there's an element of when I see people are doing, you know, visiting relatives or graves, I always try and keep at a distance and polite as possible. And actually sometimes it does feel a little awkward to film in some places, so I don't, you know, I'm not in the camera in those parts, or so yeah, I try and keep myself to myself in the best possible way.
That sounds a little bit like to myself in this, you're like, oh no, that's the right place to be doing this. But yeah, we did one the other day in Clun, which is a tiny village, and I was filming an old yew tree, obviously.
Yes, of course.
Yeah,
as one does.
Have you ever seen a 2,000-year-old tree? And all stuff. Anyway, the sound was shit, so I had to get. But also, like, I nearly wiped myself out going into it. And I realised when we recorded, I was quite happy, but I'd been holding a Magnum, like a white Magnum, the entire time, and like forgot it was in my hand. So you had to start.
Wait, sorry, you mean the ice cream, not the gun?
Yeah.
Okay, because that would be quite a cause for concern.
Yeah. I was like, no, the gun, obviously. I don't, you know. Right. Yeah, no, it was, nothing else was open. So I had to go into this very weird little shop. And all he had was like postcards in Clun and an ice cream box. So I was like, I'll have a white Magnum. But yeah, I mean, it is fascinating. And I think in terms of falling in a grave, just tell us a bit about that and we will move on to something more serious. But what's that like? Yeah. All that on an episode.
What's that like? Well, I mean, I'm being a little bit overly dramatic here. It wasn't necessarily into the grave, but I'll explain. Harrow on the Hill, there's a really famous old church there, which actually built on, I think, probably a former Celtic ground of worship, I imagine, as a lot of these churches are built on. And actually, I was there because, quite sad in a way, but it's where Lord Byron's illegitimate daughter, Allegra, is buried in an unmarked grave, although there is now a plaque that was put there, I think, in the 80s by Byron's society. So I was doing a feature on that. And obviously, it's on a hill. And some of these graves, obviously, within the process of time, are starting to slide down the hill. And that's where I found myself, sliding down a hill. So I was sort of, you know, doing a piece to camera, getting the angle right, and obviously sort of launched myself into this.
Yeah.
Obviously thinking about where my feet's going to be. And yeah, lo and behold, obviously one part of the ground was slightly higher off than the other. And I completely stacked it, and it did, you know, it did make a good fun Instagram story for everyone. I think I might have to repost that at some point.
Dude, I will need to see that, but I think
you know, I try and come across all smooth within this, but it's a bit of an act.
Oh, because I thought, because some of, like, I mean, you've got this kind of nailed down. It's very good, but some of the videos you start doing, the amount of time something happens, and I think, oh God, this is awful. But yours always look very, you know, like the editing and stuff is fantastic. Amy, I'm absolutely hogging the floor here. Have you got you've obviously got some questions for Jono.
Yeah, so I just want to briefly mention the fact that my mum is the only person I've ever come across that's fallen into a grave more than once. So it's good
Oh.
that there's another person, so I can comfort her by saying that she's not the only one.
Yeah. How did that happen, if you don't mind me asking?
She's a very, very short lady, and she doesn't look at the ground very often when she's walking. So the first time it was pretty much nearly a freshly dug grave, which was rather stressful for her. And the second one, it had just sunken quite a lot, so she fell over, and but she was on her own. So
Oh,
she's
gosh.
always doing it. She's always doing it. But
But now the rest of us know.
yeah, so sorry, Mum, I've outed you as a
Oh.
yeah, she spend as much time in graveyards as I do.
Oh, is that where you get your interest from?
Yes, I think growing up in the area that me and Alex have both grown up, there's lots of really beautiful kind of country parish churches and kind of cemeteries that are a little bit more older in the sense of they've been there a very, very long time compared to some of the bigger cemeteries. So, for instance, when I first went to Anfield Cemetery in Liverpool, I was shocked by the size. I got lost. A delightful Scouse man helped me. So it's a fun day out for everyone. But what I would be interested in kind of picking your brains about a little bit is that shift from the parish graveyard to these big, almost cities of the dead. What are some of the unique features in some of the Magnificent Seven, for instance, that you wouldn't necessarily see in your local churchyard?
Yep, that's a very good question. So, well, obviously, apart from the size of them, and that they almost are allotted areas of ground. So, of course, so they're far larger. Also, in terms of the fact that there was a lot of changes going on around the early to mid 1800s, whereby it wasn't just about Church of England burial grounds, but there were obviously a lot of non-conformists. Churches and burial grounds that were coming around at that time. So there was definitely a shift in regards to the fact that, as I said, one didn't have to just be buried by their local cemetery, by their local church, sorry. Also, the other element, which I think Alex picked up on before, is the fact that obviously during the time of large industry and people from little villages were therefore going into the big hubs of, as you said, London, Liverpool, Birmingham, then obviously those city centres were, becoming overpopulated. So there was a demand and a need to have larger cemeteries in place. Whereas obviously before that wasn't necessarily the case when people were confined to smaller villages. So that's probably the major shifts, and that's sort of why a lot of this did occur and happen. And obviously, as I mentioned before, in regards to the fact that it was unsanitary. And the other thing as well, and in regards to the elements of what sort of, as you said, sort of visual changes, these, you mentioned earlier in regards to some of these burial grounds had been around since time eternity. This, in regards to the modern thinking, it was very much involved in the modern architecture of the day. So that's where obviously we see a lot more prevalent neo-Gothic and Renaissance art coming through within the gravestones, I suppose one could say. Well, I think there's more of a technical term for that, but I can't remember off the top of my head.
Sorry.
Funerary art,
There
funerary.
we go.
Oh,
Yep.
funerary art. But actually, just to go on that a little bit, yeah, funerary art is actually really fascinating, and it's something that I completely haven't covered in terms of the shifting tastes and designs of the gravestone. So obviously, as I said, I mentioned you've got Neo-Gothic, there's pre-Raphaelite going on there, you've got Art Deco graves, obviously we have modernist graves now. I imagine we're going into an era of probably just digital graves,
Yeah, wow.
which I have done a documentary on, but already that was 6 years ago and it feels like an eternity. So I have to update that one.
Changing so fast. I did
Yeah.
see a grave, it's interesting because you see all these sort of very beautiful ornate graves, and absolutely, as you say, reflecting kind of the architecture, the taste and things of its time. And I'm sure it, you know, maybe at some points in history, it must have looked quite garish. To us now, a lot of the Victorian things, you know, we sort of look at it with this kind of almost like a sense of nostalgia in a way, despite what a lot of that was built on top of. But I think, you know, the little parish churches and things like that, where I live out in the sticks and things, it's much more kind of like almost like the old curiosity shop kind of little knell, you know, like you think of like the sexton and these kind of yew trees, willows, long forgotten graves, things like that. Nothing with the kind of grandeur of these guys. I did see one in Hampstead Cemetery, which was a gravestone of somebody who I'm assuming, obviously, just through the power of sight, was a taxi driver, because there were little toy taxis on the grave, but also the gravestone had a taxi on it, and there was a picture of him. And yeah, it was all very like, I mean, it must have been quite an extravagant gravestone to purchase, you know, but they'd really gone to town with it, which, when you sort of look at it, you think, gosh, you know, but also in a way, it was kind of a delightful tribute to someone who thought that was absolutely brilliant. It's certainly one of the more unusual ones I've seen, very modern in a strange sort of way. But yeah, that was what I thought sort of stood out as quite a bizarre, in a good way, grave. It was interesting. Yeah.
Without saying slightly morbid, I know the grave. Yeah, well, I believe it's the one you're talking about, which is next to the Art Deco Angel, the Bianchi Memorial. Is that correct? Is it right next to it?
Because I'm laughing because I've been there so many times. I used to live there, so I used to go to Waitrose.
Did you? Oh, okay. Well, funny enough, I'm actually there 2 days' time.
Gosh. Okay. Well, yeah. No, I know it. Yeah, I used to be down on Inglewood Road, so I used to come around past the Alice House and go. Anyway, you keep walking up, don't you? And it was there. But that is exactly, you've seen the grave. So
yeah. I have seen the grave. And obviously that, by the way, we just talked about funerary art. But so next to that grave is this art, beautiful Art Deco angel. And it's the Bianchi Memorial. And it's dedicated to a lady that died giving birth. And obviously her husband erected this fantastic, it's beautiful. And actually it's on the cover of a lot of Hampstead tour books and whatnot. And if any of the listeners, please do Google that, because it is absolutely, you know, beautiful and astounding. Unfortunately, someone's taken the railings away. You know, they've been stolen, and actually, unfortunately, that cemetery, a couple of the other memorials have also been stolen. So that's quite a sad modern occurrence. You know, we talked earlier about body snatchers. Now it's not so much about snatching bodies; it's about snatching the materials used to create memorials. Yeah. And I think people were put off actually until very recently from doing that. Hampstead Cemetery actually is very much to some extent overlooked in comparison to something like Highgate, which is down the road. But maybe I kind of wanted to keep it like that.
No, I was saying, now we've got to push it. We're like, do go and see it, because we can see like our listener numbers. We get a lot of people in London listening. And so I was going to say, go see it. And then I'm thinking, actually, maybe we shouldn't have said that.
Yeah, got to keep some secrets, guys. Got to gatekeep, even if the gates have been stolen.
Cemetery gatekeep.
Yeah, I think it's interesting how the shift from kind of, I don't know what you do if you stole bodies. Now, obviously, for slightly more sinister, there's no use for them, is there now, really, in terms of the market? But I think stealing stuff, I mean, there must have been people back in the day that were stealing, you know, the railings and various things. So maybe in some ways it's a modern crime that feels old fashioned as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think the bodies were worth more back in the day. And actually at St. Bride's Church in the City of London, if you go into the crypt, they have, and I featured this on my Instagram, but they do have an iron coffin there. So the idea was obviously that body snatchers couldn't get at you, at your remains. But unfortunately, that didn't last very long. The actual churches were against the idea of iron coffins. Because they wouldn't decompose. So, you know, you can't win, really.
Not exactly. You've got to, you know, your risk getting taken on. I mean, didn't Iron Mad Wilkinson have an iron coffin? He got too fat to be buried in it. I'm sure that was at the start of the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah, he did.
Because he was, you know, he got hard on over iron. He was literally like, I want an iron coffin. And then they wouldn't, you know, he got too fat, so he couldn't be buried in it.
Iron Mad by name, Iron Mad by nature.
Yeah. Well, I hope he kept the receipt.
Yeah, exactly. I think he was loaded. Do you know why? I think it was just a kind of idle extravagance. So as we're warming to the theme of cadavers, why don't you talk to us about the railway that transported the dead? Because this is fascinating. And I have a hunch you're going to do this justice. So would you talk to us about that?
So I just love the way you started with that. As we're on the subject of cadavers, I'm like, oh gosh, where are we going to go here now?
I know.
Yeah, so the Necropolis Railway, again, we talk about industrious Victorians. Obviously, the railway at the time was a very modern invention. And one of the ideas was to have a huge cemetery outside of London as well. And so they founded Brookwood Cemetery, which is still, as I believe, the largest in the UK. I think at one time it was the largest in the world, but I believe that's not the case anymore. So Brookwood Cemetery was in Surrey. The idea was to transport the London dead to Brookwood by using the modern railway at the time. So there was a dedicated platform, an area of Waterloo Station, in order to load the coffins onto this specific train. So you would have obviously the coffins in some of the carriages, and then the mourners in the others. Obviously, the coffins only had one-way tickets. And it was actually, of course, this is very Victorian, but it was done by class system as well. So you'd have first, second, and third class coffin
Insulting
grips.
death as well. They're just like,
Yeah.
you can't sit there. You can't sit with us. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well,
And it's
it's a real fetishization, really, isn't it? I think, I think the British still kind of have
Oh, yeah.
about
We still love it.
certain classes. So, as I said, there was also bars, by the way, I believe, at each end of the station. So, if you wanted a stiff whiskey, obviously for the living rather than the dead, then that would be that was allowed. The cemeteries allowed that. So that was the Necropolis Railway, and you can still see the building today, which is just off of Waterloo, the proximity of Waterloo Station. But you kind of have to know where it is to be able to see it, basically. But it is still quite a lovely, grandiose building. I believe at the moment it's abandoned. So hopefully someone will come and do something interesting with it, or live in it. I'm up for the idea. And yeah, but it sort of fell out of favor. And during World War II, the Blitz, a lot of the railway lines were damaged, and then, as I said, they sort of put it to rest, so to speak. But interestingly, though, if you do take the train from Waterloo to Brookwood, you are still on the same tracks that you would have been in, in Victorian times. So and they still have a little bit of that tr the original stop there that you can see, but it is sort of hidden in bushes now. So yeah, that was quite an interesting day for me, because, as I said, Brookwood is the largest, and I mean it just goes on and on and on, and it was a really fine hot summer's day. I would take a map with you, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't realize I'd heard about it and read a bit, but I didn't realize you could still see the building, which I think is just extraordinary. And also that you would go, well, I suppose it's sense, isn't it? You would still largely go on the same route.
Yeah, exactly the same route. And actually, Brookwood, they've got some really fantastic people that are buried there. John Singer Sargent is probably one of the most notable.
Wow.
So please do go and check him out. And then Zaha Hadid is probably one of the most recent famous people that have their graves there, their final resting places. It's quite a pared back, grave, actually, for Zaha. But yeah.
Considered. What's John Singer Sargent's got? Because I mean, he's obviously with his, is his quite understated? His grave, or is it? I don't know.
No, it is quite understated, I would say. I think probably he wanted his art to speak for himself, but I'm just second guessing there.
Even his sort of Duchess painting, they're sort of beautiful, and the look of them in it. But yeah, no, I can see that. I just maybe it was quite a muted grave. I don't know why I asked that. I was just fascinated because obviously his two sort of not two famous paintings, there's more than that, but the two that just stand out to me constantly of just being absolutely beautiful. I'm a big fan, so I'm interested. And there is, I suppose, something about being a fan and then going to see their grave.
Yeah.
Like, is that weird? Possibly.
No.
No.
No, I don't think. I mean,
No.
look, I mean, I would obviously say no, but
Read the room.
what do you ladies think?
I think it's, do you know what? I think when it comes to things like that, I think there isn't, I'm not religious. I'm not doing it for those aspects. I think there's something about the macabre that also feels respectful. And also there's a curiosity about it, isn't there?
Yeah.
Like that's the kind of the last like marking point of that person's like ex not existence because they were dead, but like that's their last kind of mark.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating, isn't it? I find there's something very interesting. Amy, what do you think?
I think it's a way to honor them as well. So if they've had a significant impact in your life, then obviously, as long as it's not halfway across the world or something like that, if it's feasible, going and visiting their grave is can be, I think, a very powerful experience. So, for example, I'm a massive Dylan Thomas fan. Going to Dylan Thomas's grave in Wales was a really special kind of event. And it allowed, I think, access to the full story and the full picture kind of thing. So I think there's nothing weird at all about it. But then again, are we the right ones to be saying it?
I think comes things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. But I do. I think cemeteries have, and I'd be interested to hear your opinion on it, Jono. They have an enduring legacy, and I think societally their significance might have shifted throughout their long history, but I think there's certain things that continue. I think there's certain things that continue to appeal to us even now that would have been the same things that appealed to Victorians who went promenading around cemeteries and things. So what do you think is the enduring legacy of cemeteries, but also how do you think our relationship has changed with cemeteries compared to, say, our Victorian counterparts?
So I think in regards to when we were talking earlier about the Magnificent Seven cemeteries, originally the plan was, and actually they've sort of followed it through, that once these cemeteries were filled up, they would then become gardens, essentially, that people, members of the public could walk through. And that concept was come up with a gentleman called John Loudon, who is buried actually in Kensal Green Cemetery. So I believe the modern interpretation of a modern cemetery, certainly these ones, these sort of British English looking gardens, let's just say, where everything's sort of kept back a little bit, but there still are slightly wild around the gravestones. The idea was actually that, yes, it should be a place that people can visit and pay their respects, but also a place that the living can also enjoy as well. So I think the Victorians were very in tune with that. Now, you know, don't get me wrong. I mean, I have this a lot where people say about cemeteries, oh, well, that's a bit of a niche, isn't it, really? But I always like to say, not really, because everyone dies. Not that much of a niche, really. So I think there is certainly, as Alex said earlier, there's an element of the macabre as well, which could intrigue people. But I think certainly to project this back on myself in terms of, you know, things that I post on Instagram and TikTok, the idea to open that up to other people that might not have realized maybe they have an interest in visiting cemeteries, or as you said earlier in regards to Dylan Thomas, visiting someone that they respect and admire. And also just slightly to your point as well, I always find it quite fascinating that a lot of these, say, literary greats probably didn't know they'd be buried in certain cemeteries or their gravestone would look the way it does. I mean, the obvious example, and again, I can riff on this for another hour, but is Oscar Wilde's grave in Père Lachaise. I mean, I don't think for the life of me that he ever believed that he'd be buried in Paris. Yeah. And of course, the person that designed his gravestone, they never met each other either. So, and that was that sculptor, that artist's interpretation of Oscar Wilde's work. Whether Oscar Wilde, the famous aesthete, would have approved of it, we will never know. But the fact is that actually in Père Lachaise, his grave is one of the most visited, along with Jim Morrison's. And I'd
really like to go to see.
oh really? At Jim Morrison's?
Yeah, massive Doors fan.
Oh, brilliant. I mean, the only thing is, I don't want to let you down with this, but it is slightly underwhelming.
Yes, I've heard.
Yeah.
I want to make that journey and be underwhelmed.
Yeah, that's going to sell it. You should put that on a t-shirt.
Yes.
That's the perfect line, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm underwhelmed. Yeah. No, I love the idea of that. But no, unfortunately, again, that, you know, Jim Morrison's grave has been targeted to some extent, whether by maniacal fans, I would say. But, you know, obviously with his bust has been taken and people put chewing gum on, you know, in regards to Wilde's as well, that people are obviously kissing his gravestone. And then obviously they've now erected this sort of pane of glass around it. So now people are kissing the glass, which is quite funny. But I think there was some urban legend about kissing Oscar Wilde's grave, which I've certainly I've certainly promoted.
I was going to say, which you've encouraged. I mean, in contrast, I'm a big Oscar Wilde fan, less The Doors only because I don't know that much about them. So Amy is a lot cooler than me, but I think...
No, definitely not.
But I think you might be, but I think Oscar Wilde, big fan. I always find, because his grave is very famous, because it is in contrast to his work, I would say, but there you go. But I didn't realise that there was a whole thing about kissing it as well, and I find that kind of fascinating, because you also did another video, which sounds like I've gone kind of knee deep into fangirling, but you know, it's fine.
I'm very flattered, thank you. Very flattered.
Good. Amy Blake, don't be underwhelmed.
Yeah, be underwhelmed.
That's be underwhelmed. Make that journey and be underwhelmed.
That's what I'm going to say on my cemetery dates. Yeah. I'm just going to front this by saying, please be underwhelmed.
I find that's a really good caveat. If you just do that just before you might just go, do you know what? Just prepare to be underwhelmed.
In more ways than one. And also, have you been to the Lily Lang tree?
Man in there that will shout at you if you throw a ball for his dog, not at his dog. I don't know that. I don't even know if he's still alive. It's not even that long ago, but I digress. So what were we talking about? We said something before. I completely lost.
So it was we're making an element. I think, I don't know, maybe there's Oscar Wilde's Sphinx grave. And then you said about deep diving into probably something to do with my content, I imagine. Oh, going with the flow here, I don't know, but
yeah, you're like, I don't know, was she fangirling something within, we're on the periphery of that. It was about a grave that you put a video up to the point that the face has gone a little bit shiny where people have been kissing it so much.
Oh, shiny face, hold on.
I think the mouth or the nose, I can't remember. I should have kind of looked at the video and got the name, because I think it's a few videos in, but there is a grave somewhere that I think he was an actor or something and it was lucky to kiss him, and so it's worn, like the mouth's gone like a different color.
Oh I know, sorry, I was gonna make another pun there about clearly he and I need a bit of foundation, but but there we go. So yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. So that is at Père Lachaise Cemetery, and that is the grave of Victor Noir. Mm-hmm. And he was a journalist, and okay. He was shot and killed in a duel with Napoleon's grandson, I think it was, at the time. And he was actually reinterred, I think, at Père Lachaise. And this very detailed bronze effigy was created and put on top of his grave, and one notable feature of the effigy is that he has quite a large bulge just below his belt level. And an urban legend grew, no pun intended, that women could potentially become fertile, or maybe, you know, super fertile, by rubbing or kissing the bulge or other areas of the effigy, so his lips, for instance, or rubbing his feet. And this persists this day. Dita Von Teese, the famous glamour model, he used to go out with Marilyn Manson, I believe has some quite saucy pictures of her riding the grave. Which again, I wanted to put in the video, but I never know with the puritanical nature of Instagram if that would have been allowed, you know.
What are the limits? What's allowed?
Yeah. Well, you say what's the limits, but I think I'm very close to being banned. So I'm towing the line here. No pun intended. But yeah, so that's the grave of Victor Noir. And so, yes, when I was filming that, and, you know, it was a sort of a relatively random day. It wasn't like a weekend. But yes, lo and behold, it's a very, very popular grave. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I believe there's a lady in Ireland who I think she's wearing she obviously has quite a prominent bust. What's her name? Molly Malone, isn't it? Right?
You know, the old folk song. I've seen it when I used to live in Dublin, and that was, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, that there's that as well. So that's similar. And I saw there was a bit of a backlash on Twitter where people are saying, oh, well, you can't rub the bust of Molly Malone. But then obviously there's a counter argument to say, well, this is Victor Noir's grave. And you've got women straddling it. And then the French seem really quite happy about it. So
quite a French thing, though, isn't it? They're just going to give this.
Yeah, exactly. Zut alors.
I mean, quite shiny boobs now because of it. And I suppose there's nothing to say that's going to help fertility or anything, at least with this guy. I mean, I've just had a look at it and it is quite prominent. There was a guy, actually, as a sideline, who lived in our village when we were little, that little, like kids, it always looked like we used to like laugh, think, oh my God, what's that? And then it turned out he had a hernia, actually, in fact. So, but it did, it looked literally like that. So he'd walk around, but he was this old man, very polite and everything. He used to go to chapel and all the rest of it. And we were always just in stitches because we just thought it was, you know, it's not, he had a hernia that was just clearly looked pretty much like this guy's thing.
Yeah,
I really did not know where you were going then with that, Alex. I was for a moment. I was like, "What? There was a man in your village that had a bulge, like Victor? What?"
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess it sort of echoes what they did in, was it Tudor times, where men used to put, you know, aubergines down their pants and things like that. So
these type gesture, it's all very phallic-centric. I mean, that, yeah. It's so, isn't it?
Bring it back, I say. Why not?
I think so.
Exactly. Suddenly, the sale of aubergines will be going up tenfold.
They perish quite quickly, they don't they? And that's just going to turn to mush. But I think, you know, I won't overthink it. So anyway, moving on. Talking about another thing you mentioned was the canonical five who are buried in different spots in London. Have you been, in some cases, are some not in unmarked graves?
They are, that's correct. Yeah, some of them, and actually this is quite common, sadly, in a lot of these Victorian and sort of early 20th century victims of murders, that they are buried in common graves. So even I'm doing something quite recently on the Blackout Ripper. I don't know if you know much about him, but obviously it was during the Blitz, 1944, I think it was, 1943, 1944, and he would go around and he'd be murdering sex workers around Soho. And of course, you know, the police were obviously at capacity at the time, and obviously they were completely understaffed. So he sort of got away with it for quite a little while. But a couple of those victims are also buried in unmarked graves, and it's been quite difficult for me to be able to track down exactly where they're buried, but I persist. But so going back to Jack the Ripper's victims, obviously the canonical five, potentially maybe more women could have been murdered. Maybe there could have been seven. Yes, in one of the cemeteries where some of the ladies are buried, they are in common graves, but they do have plaques on the ground which are dedicated to them.
Mm.
Which I suppose is at least something. I suppose there's that, in a way, there's that, again, it's attributed to the street artist Banksy, but I feel like someone probably said it before, but they say that you die twice. You know, the first is when your physical death, and the second is when the last person utters your name. So I think in some poignant way, it is a way of respecting and remembering the victims, because obviously what happened was, you know, tragic, basically.
Yeah, but it's been eclipsed by this, I suppose, human proclivity for gore. And we're no different now when we're talking about true crime. I think I don't say we, but, you know, in general about true crime. You know, these women's, and not to kind of get too serious about it, of course, but it's a serious thing. Is that they're, you know, things like their graves, the reality of their position in society and how people like that would have been largely forgotten, which is awful, and eclipsed by things like Jack the Ripper tours and merchandise and all these things that people for years, I mean, I think maybe that's on the change as people start to look more at you know, the history of these women and things, but it's, you know, they know the route that he took, all these things so well, and yet I'd say the vast majority of people, in fact, don't even remember the victims' names either, which I think is an interesting, in a tragic way, dynamic and quite revealing as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a real fine line, I suppose. You know, one has to trot. I mean, obviously, yeah, you mentioned with the tours. I mean, I guess it's to the individual. And I suppose, just like anything with anything that has a commercial capacity, if people weren't interested in it, then it wouldn't happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe calling your barber Jack the Clipper, maybe I've sort of got a, maybe that's where the line can be drawn.
There's ones who, I don't know, treading the line there, I think you might be.
Yeah, exactly. And so close shave indeed. But like, I think, you know, in terms of the fact that there are plaques there, I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? Because I think when I was a kid and I would go to something like the London Dungeon, and they have a sort of a Jack the Ripper experience there, you know, I was terrified and enthralled by that. And it's sort of stuck and resonated with me. So, you know, that there is an element that, okay, we are keeping that history alive, and hopefully maybe in some optimistic way that things like that don't happen again. And I think we've learned a lot. You know, obviously it's a more of a modern phrase, but the idea of a serial killer, I believe the police are quite good at stopping a lot of these things quite early, because obviously there's certain attributes that people have to become serial killers. Going back to it, yeah, I think whenever I try and make any of these types of reels where it does involve serial killers, one, I sort of have a very loose loose yardstick that, okay, it might be in living memory, but I suppose anything sort of post World War II, I'm sort of not really going to cover, if that makes sense. I feel like it just feels a little bit too on the nose. And the second thing is, like, although I try and make them engaging and entertaining, I try and not go into something which feels like I'm not being respectful of the victims. You know, I'm trying to place it maybe in the viewpoint of the victims rather than focus on someone like Jack the Ripper. So, and I think that's hopefully a very modern way of doing it, but also it sort of allows a bit more empathy.
Yeah.
Because it is terrifying. I mean, you know, I talked about the London Ripper, the London Monster. I think getting my serial killers confused here, although I actually didn't kill anyone. But, you know, again, these Georgian women, in one sense, you know, it's absolutely fascinating that they had to sort of construct these cork rumps to protect their bottoms and whatnot. And actually, some of them, ones that couldn't afford the cork rumps, were using metal pans to walk around London. But, you know, they must have been absolutely terrified.
Yeah, it's a very
So I think that it really is a bit of a double-edged sword.
And that leads nicely, although that's possibly the wrong word, to the vampire story that you're going to tell us.
As we
kind of wind to a close, having taken up a good deal of your time, but I thought this could be, you know, that's manoeuvred nicely to that, if you can do such a thing. But why don't you indulge us with that?
Yeah, so this is actually, it's a sort of wonderful combination of, we're talking about the seven cemeteries and obviously more of the sort of macabre and occult and horror. It sort of entwines it all. So Highgate Cemetery, there was a supposed Highgate vampire, which started in the late 60s and early 70s. And it really sort of started the satanic panic at the time. And it was very much a vampire craze. And I don't really know what came first, because obviously at the time they had those wonderful Hammer horror films. Yeah, and so I think definitely imaginations were spilling over. So there were two main figures that were involved in the Highgate vampire story, and one of which is called David Farrant, and he was an investigator. And the other was Sean Manchester, who was an exorcist. And they believed that there was a vampire that was haunting Highgate Cemetery, and that they, I believe David Farrant believed that he actually saw an apparition. And this actually goes back a little further than that. In the late Victorian times, you had those penny dreadful novelizations.
Yeah,
and there was one of the characters was called Springheel Jack.
Amy loves.
I love Springheel Jack.
Oh, brilliant! Okay,
big legend in my life.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for someone to do sort of a modern interpretation of him or her. So, Amy, make it happen.
I'm not dropping any hints, but there might be. He might be featuring on the podcast, and not literally, we haven't managed to get the Ouija boards out or something. But there's a in the pipeline, let's just say.
Brilliant. I'm looking forward to listening to that one and hearing his side of the story. So obviously there's some sort of foundation in regards to potentially a character leaping around or, you know, sort of appearing. It caught the press. People like the News of the World suddenly came interested in regards to the idea that there was a vampire stalking Highgate Cemetery. And then all of a sudden, these dead foxes started appearing with apparent fangs and bites in their cadaver. So there was definitely some strange goings on there. And I imagine maybe because it was the late 60s, early 70s, there probably was some occult practices, potentially. But anyway, the press took this on, this idea of the vampire, and it actually culminated on Friday the 13th on 1970, I believe, where hundreds of young people descended on the gates of Highgate Cemetery, and chaos ensued, and the police had to be called. And that's kind of the story. I mean, again, I don't think anyone was caught. No vampire was caught. It was never seen again. But those two gentlemen certainly put a lot to the story. And there was a couple of documentaries that people like ITV made at the time, and you can still find some of that on YouTube, which is quite fascinating.
I will look that up. I suppose it's revealing of how, even if we think of kind of cemeteries and things in a secular or non-secular way, in fact, the human kind of idea of kind of getting whipped up into a frenzy, and that's mob culture is ever present, isn't it? Really, you can soon get a bit of a stir, and people can get rather into this sort of thing. And it is kind of very, very Hammer horror. And I'm a massive fan. Well, in no small part, I'm a massive Oliver Reed fan as well. But I think the Hammer horrors kind of encapsulate that perfectly. Amy, have you got anything that you want to ask?
I would, and I know this is a really difficult question, and you probably have many, but I'd be interested to hear what maybe one or a couple of your favorite graves are and where we can find them, particularly for people like myself who spend a lot of time in cemeteries. Where can we find them? Why are they important to you?
Yeah, oh, that again, great question. And I guess if we're going to do a bit of a round robin, the top hits. obviously, I've already mentioned Oscar Wilde, and obviously, we touched upon Vincent Wilde's grave in Pella Sheds, and they're two of my favorites because obviously they have such unique stories to them. On top of that, you know, obviously, when we talk about the Magnificent Seven cemeteries, in Brompton Cemetery, we have a time tra apparent time traveling tomb grave of
Oh,
Mrs.
wow.
Portoy and her two daughters. And it's very much very on the nose in the style of the craze for Egyptology, which happened around that time. And so it's sort of built like a, well, it sort of does look like a bit like a TARDIS, a marble TARDIS. But there's an urban legend which apparently we've lost the key to enter the tomb, and inside the tomb there could be a time machine. Yeah. And actually, but the thing is, you've got to be a bit careful with this because, and it's a little like the Highgate vampire story we just had, because that was, I think, my first video that actually went viral on TikTok and then Instagram. And I was slightly concerned that people would try and do something stupid, like try and break into it. And God forbid. And it is a grade listed monument as well, a grade listed tomb. So I believe there is a key, but it's beautiful, and it's certainly something that as you're walking around Brompton Cemetery by yourself with a date, it's something that certainly catches your eye. So I would certainly suggest that's one of my favorites, and it holds a special place for me. And then there's another one which, because I think we've been quite London centric, or I've been quite London centric because I'm in London, but there's one which is further south, southern England. And it's Mad Jack's tomb. It's a 25-foot pyramid. So again, it's very much in the style of the fashion for Egyptology at the time. And the Mad Jack, as he was known, he was actually an MP, and he was famous for getting kicked out of Parliament drunk. I think he was the only MP that's ever been kicked out of Parliament drunk. But I don't know. Maybe we're a little bit more lenient these days.
Least worries these days, yeah.
Yeah, I could think of a couple of MPs, but I'm not going to name them now. And then, so anyway, so when he was buried, apparently he was buried sitting up with a bottle of port on the table, and I think a roast chicken, because he believed that one day he would be resurrected. So when he's resurrected, he'd be able to have a fine meal in front of him. So that's Mad Jack's 25-foot tomb. And I think if I was going to go for a third one, I think I mentioned earlier there was a Victorian gentleman called John Loudon, and he, as I said, he designed the sort of sprawling wild English cemeteries that we know and love today. Sort of came up with that concept. He designed, I think it's, don't hold me on this, but I think it's the only gravestone he designed. But he designed one for his parents, and that's in Pinner, which is sort of in the suburbs of North London. And it is a, well, it's called the floating coffin tomb, but it's not really floating because it is attached to sort of a concrete structure, but it has a coffin sticking outside either end of it. And there's again an urban legend, and maybe it's something to do with him being Scottish, but the idea is that there was a will and an inheritance. And the idea was that he would keep receiving the will and inheritance as long as his parents were still above ground. So the idea was when they died, then it's sort of like a loophole in a way, a Victorian loophole. But no, actually, the bodies of his parents are buried below ground, health and safety. So, and again, you know, it's very quaint, as you were talking about earlier, a sort of village churchyard, but it just has this huge structure. And it's really quite fascinating to go and visit. So I think those are my top three.
I think that's a good selection. You've got the agony of choice, but I'd say, you know far more about this than us, but I think that sounds like quite a lineup. So Luke, you've been fantastic and arguably one of my favorite guests, I've got to say that. And I don't say that every episode. So
thank you.
You
were thanks for having me.
Not at all. I've loved it. It's been hilarious.
It's been great.
Thanks, Amy. Thanks, Alex.
No worries. And I was going to say, do you want to do a quick mention of your socials? We'll put it up anyway, but I can say firsthand it is well worth having a look and a follow. But your Instagram and your TikTok, do you want to just tell us your handles and things so we can put those out for people?
Sure. I'll give you the whole spiel. So my Instagram is at John O'Namara. So that's John O'Jono Namara, N-A-M-A-R-A. It's Irish, so it's a lot of A's going on there, a lot of vowels. And my TikTok is Cemetery Safari. And you can also find my stuff on my website, which is johnonamara.com.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And yeah, loved it. Thank you so much, Johnny.
Thank you. All the best, guys.
Thank you so much. Cheers.
Cheers. Bye.